I see, up there in the darkness of my room, the face of Leonard Stern, the greatest speller that I ever encountered. He taught me a lesson. And that lesson was that some people are talented and other people just try hard. Leonard Stern, you know, by the time I was in fourth grade, I'd already developed a fantastic talent for spelling. And you can't explain it. Some people can spell just because of intuitive talent. Others spell because they study and work. And I just seemed to be intuitive. I could spell words that I didn't know the meaning of. And I began to develop power and a sense of invulnerability. And by the time I was in fifth grade, I was the top speller from the Warren G. Harding School. It's a great feeling. You're able to do something better than anybody else. And you begin to get this sense of tremendous confidence. Unbeaten. In seventh grade, I was entered in the National Spelling Bee Championship. I breezed through the first round, and I began to gather fans around me. I began to sense fame, and I began to taste it, and I practiced and rehearsed. And every night, Miss Robinette, after class, would give me special words for the big Saturday when I was going to go into the regional finals. The finals began that afternoon. I was nervous. I'd worked hard. There was a crowd out there in the auditorium. Miss Robinette was in the back, and I could see her looking up. My mother, my kid brother. And one by one, spellers began to be eliminated. Until at last, there was only me and Leonard Stern. We were the finalists. The sense of excitement, the fantastic sense that you're almost champion. And I could see Stern across the stage from me. Now, there are many words that us spellers practice on. Just the way golfers practice on putts, and they practice on tee shots. The spellers practice the word scissors. That's the standard spelling word. Syzygy. And I had these down cold. Well, I stood on the stage, waiting. I made a mistake. I glanced across the stage, and I caught the eye of Leonard Stern. He had a faint smile. A cool, totally sardonic look, a barracuda. And he looked totally confident. Tall, thin, aesthetic. Waiting. I got the first word. The woman told me to spell scissors. That's a word I could spell in my sleep. My head went blank. My head became cheesecake. Cottage cheese. I looked across the stage, and Leonard Stern was smiling. The seconds ticked by. I looked down into the audience, and I could see Miss Robinette, my teacher. Her face looked like cream of wheat. She was scared. She saw I was blowing it. Time was up. Leonard Stern spelled scissors in 2.5 milliseconds. And on to become the greatest speller that Indiana ever knew. I was defeated. I learned a lesson. I've never spelled in anger since.
Your host in this of the national champion, Gene Shepard.
My word, fans, I'm Gene Shepard, and we're here in the Grand Ballroom of the Mayflower Hotel in Washington, and the excitement is mounting. You can just feel it here in this room. We're following the final competition rounds of the National Spelling Bee. We're going to find out what it takes to be a national champion. Now, just think of it. Out of the whole country, over 200 million people, to be the best speller of all. Now, I don't know what that would do in your life. And incidentally, this is a kind of a historical moment for television, too, because this is the first time ever in the history of television that the National Spelling Bee has been sent coast to coast, as it happens, and in color. So we're really excited about this great sporting event here. And by the way, today is a special day for Noah Webster. That's spelled with an H, Noah Webster. He's the man who compiled the American Dictionary of the English Language back in 1828. And he's the one that started it all. Now, you know the way Shakespeare is to a playwright? Well, that's what Noah Webster is to a speller. He's the master, the patron saint of spellers. And I'll tell you, if old Noah's looking down from those pearly gates today, down on the finals of the National Spelling Bee here in the Grand Ballroom in Washington, in the hotel, the Mayflower Hotel, you know that he's smiling. And I'd like to introduce my partner here for this exciting event. This is Steve Hayes. You're seeing now on your screen. Steve is the runner-up in last year's final competition. He's been right up there on that summit, and he knows what it feels like. Runner-up, Steve. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And are you looking forward to an exciting final?
Yes, it's a lot better watching.
And the field looks good.
Pardon?
Does the field look good?
Yes, very much.
Mean, hard.
Right.
Okay. And somewhere in that crowd that you're looking at of national contenders, you can see them milling around down there. They're going to start again the last round. You're looking at the champ. It's the person who's made it all the way on that long, hard road from a classroom somewhere out in the country to this ballroom right here in Washington, D.C., just a few blocks away from the White House, the Mayflower Hotel. Now, he's done it by spelling the right way all the way. Now, that kid doesn't know that he's the champ yet. All he knows is that this is it. And you just can't go any higher than the Nationals. Take a look at the crowd down there. There they are. They're all sitting there. He's yawning now. He's trying to be calm. There's a little bit of the crowd that's here watching the scene. You know, there's a different kind of air being breathed up here at the Olympus of Spellers. It's a kind of air that you and I have never breathed. It is pure oxygen. I mean, it's got to be. I mean, how else could you stand up there in the final and hear those words, those fantastic words, and not only make sense of them, but then spell them? Now, that's oxygen. Look at those kids. Pure oxygen is what they're breathing. That's what the champs breathe. Seeing the last few excruciating moments of an event that takes 6 months to actually complete. Now, that's the average time span from when a kid first sweats it out in a local classroom, standing up there by that blackboard and trying to spell syzygy, to this point down here in the Grand Ballroom, a Mayflower Hotel. He sweats it out here at the finals. All along the way, from school finals to semifinals to regionals. Those words are just laying in the bushes, waiting to ambush you. They're just sitting there, millions of them in that dictionary. And you never know what they're going to ask you to spell. Just like that many booby traps. It's like crossing some kind of a sneaky minefield without a map. Next thing you know, you're just gone. A lot of kids do it, though, more than you might think. Standing up there, with that word coming at you, only somebody who's breathed in that pure oxygen up there, that last moment of the finals, can tell you how it really feels.
The first year is still all kind of a haze to me. It was my first year, and I was just kind of up in the clouds, but I remember really very little of it. I remember some of the people, and I remembered what it was like. But the other 2 years were easier for me.
At the time I was in the spelling bee, you know, I was just a kid, and we studied spelling words because we enjoyed it, and it was kind of a family activity, more or less. And when I, you know, when the specific event of my winning the National Spelling Bee was not planned, I mean, we weren't, you know, gunning, competing to win it. We were just kind of going for fun and to see what had happened.
I think it was very deep need to really succeed at something. And I was totally elated when I did win the thing. It, too, I think has greatly reinforced my feeling that I can succeed. I think it's been a very important element of my life in that regard.
Well, winning wasn't... It was great. Something, there's something about winning. You feel like you could just float to the ceiling. But and winning is great. But after 3 years, somehow it's kind of a letdown because you feel this is great. But what have I done after 3 years? Or I studied for more than that. I studied 4 years. After 4 years of hard work, you know, this is wonderful. But shouldn't it be just like paradise?
One thing that I learned from studying spelling words and participating in the spelling bees was just that it was fun to study and that, you know, kind of developed some methodical habits of studying that have stayed essentially the same. I think, you know, they've been applied to different things since then, but just kind of learned to study, turned into a bookworm, I guess.
In 1951, about all I did to study was to... study the words of the champions booklet and the grade spellers. I knew that this wasn't adequate, or I knew it after I competed in the National Bee in 51. So when I went home, I decided to, on a plan of study, this involved going to the library every Saturday and getting about 20 magazines and just scanning the pages, writing down the words that I didn't know, and then looking words up for the phonetical spelling and the definitions. That was the first phase of it. Of course, my mother and sister gave these words out to me. They labored after the cows were milked and gave these words out to me. The second phase was to study, go all the way through a collegiate dictionary three times.
I know that sometimes there were interruptions that I didn't even notice because I was so nervous or so engrossed with the spelling. I remember one year a kid knocked over somebody's son, and he was kind of a pest, but he knocked over a potted plant in the grand ballroom of the hotel where we were spelling, and I never knew it. And it was supposedly made such a loud clatter that everybody rushed over and everything. I never knew it. Not once my mother had to tell me about it afterwards.
I lived in the country. We lived on a 14-acre farm. And we actually didn't have very modern conveniences during my growing up years. I think we got electric lights in 48. And as a result of the spelling bee, we got running water. We put in a pump. And my uncles and all came down and helped, and we dug ditches and put in a pump and had running water. So that was an exciting time.
Gesundheit.
Gesundheit. Gesundheit.
We're now watching the final. This is live.
Poltroon. A poltroon is a coward, cowardly fellow, spiritless fellow. Poltroon.
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 P-O-L-T-R-O-O-N.
Yeah, that was Gail Meyer in Bartlett, Tennessee.
Fanfaronade or fanfaronade, the French word meaning a swaggering, empty boasting, a bluster, fanfare. Fanfaronade or fanfaronade.
What sound am I hearing in the third syllable? Is it a short I or a dotted schwa?
Fanfaronade or fanfaronade. Ah. Fanfaronade.
Can you please give me the derivation?
The contestant is Comedia Jane Pratt. She's 13 years old. She's in the 8th grade, and she lives in Dickinson, Texas.
Could you tell me the Spanish word from which it's derived?
I can't do that. If you have a Spanish word in mind, then the judge
like
will...
Farinado or something? Something like that?
822, column 2.
You can see
sound.
The panic begin to set in.
Sound.
You haven't heard the word.
That's true. She has
kind of groping.
It's true, Steve. She hasn't heard this word. You can tell she's groping for how to spell a word you haven't heard.
Fanfaronada.
Thank you.
It must be a terrifying moment.
Fanfaronade.
Fanfaronade.
Wow.
Well, that's the way it goes.
The correct spelling is Fanfaronade.
She was third last year, wasn't she?
Right.
This may be pronounced either Farago or Farago or Farago.
Farago is spelled F-A-R-R-A-G-O.
Farago.
Farago. F-A-R-R-A-G-O.
Very good.
He knows what he's doing.
He knows what he's doing, all right.
Tatterdemalion. A person with ragged clothes. Tatterdemalion.
Is that
Tatterdemalion.
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 Demalion.
Tatterdemalion.
Tatterdemalion.
Or Tatterdemalion.
As you can see, pronunciation is crucial in spelling, right?
Tatterdemalion.
Right.
T-A-T-T-E-R-D-I-M-A-L-I-A-N.
Very often the words will go back and forth between
the correct spelling is T-A-T-T-E-R-D-M-A-L-I-O.
This is Julianne.
Susurrant. Susurrant means whispering or murmuring.
Susurrant.
Susurrant.
Susurrant. S-U-S-U-R-R-A-N-T. Susurrant.
That's a mother. Julie's from Gordo Elementary School in Gordo, Alabama.
Caduceus. Caduceus is a symbolic staff or herald. It's insignia of two snakes curled, emblem of the medical corps.
Caduceus.
This contestant is Dustin Caduceus. Johnson.
Caduceus.
Oh, Caduceus.
Of East Peoria, Illinois.
C-A-D-U-C-E-U-S.
Beautiful. You're a little nervous on that one, aren't you?
That concludes round 12. We have now spelled 585 words. And as you can see, seven contestants remain. Eileen Smith?
Yesterday afternoon, we started out here with 80 here. And now we're down to seven.
Apocope. Apocope is a Greek word. It means losing one or more sounds or letters at the end of a word.
Apocope. Apocope. A-P-O-C-O-P-E. Apocope.
That's Eileen Smith of Flushing, Queens, New York, St. Michael's School.
Flatteringly. This is an adjective or an adverb meaning untidy, unkempt, slovenly. Slatternly.
Slatternly. S-L-A-T-T-E-R-N-O-Y.
Very cool. They're a phone, that way.
Just watch the reactions of
Siccative.
People to the words.
Yeah. Siccative means causing to dry or promoting the action of drying. Or as a noun, it's the name of a dryer. Siccative.
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 This word is spelled S-I-C-C-A-T-I-V-E.
Siccative.
Siccative.
Siccative. S-I-C-O-T-I-V-E.
Uh-oh. That was David Cherry of Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
The correct spelling is S-I-C-C-A-T-I-V-E.
The waiting is really the worst part of this. They had shots of
the commission
Gail Meyer
of their
waiting.
Evil dudes,
and that's the worst part. The spelling
act,
is easy.
The
compared.
Quality of being
okay.
Evil. Maleficent.
Maleficent?
Maleficent.
Is it V or F?
No. Listen. Maleficent. Do you want to come closer? Maleficent.
This word is spelled M-A-L-E-F-I-C-E-N-C.
Maleficent.
Maleficent?
Right. It sounds right to me, judges. Did you hear? No?
Pronounce it again, please.
Maleficent.
Maleficent. Sounds right to me.
You're a little nervous.
No.
Maleficent?
Groping.
I think it's done. Once more.
Maleficent?
Right. Yes.
This is Gail Meyer, by the way, of Bartlett School in Bartlett, Tennessee. This is her mother here.
M-A-L-E-F-I-C-E-N-C-E.
There you are. Beautiful. Look at that. That's a relief.
This is a French word. The singular pronunciation is entremets. The plural pronunciation is entremets. It's a dish is added to the main course of a meal, like a side dish of vegetables or something like that. Now, both the singular and the plural spell the same.
Entremets. This word is spelled E-N-T-R-E-M-E-T-S. Entremets.
Entremets. Or entremets.
E-N-T-R.
Come on.
E-M.
Come on.
A-I.
Uh-oh.
S-E.
That is Mark Eppenweiler of Holland Hall in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
The correct spelling is E-N-T-R-E-N-T-S.
That's curious. Do they always have this many French words?
This is another
they
French
had a few
word.
Last year, not as many.
Eskimotage.
I don't know who selects the word.
Eskimotage means juggling or trickery or sleight of hand. Eskimotage.
Eskimotage.
Tonsillotome is an instrument for removing your tonsils. Tonsillotome.
Tonsillotome.
Okay, trivia fans, here's a piece of totally useless information. I suppose you think that most of the information you have is useless. Did you know that the American language weighs, write this down, we'll question you on this later, next semester, the American language weighs 9 pounds, 10 ounces. That's the weight of that dictionary there. By the way, Noah Webster's first dictionary has 70,000 words. That's the one he wrote back in 1828. And the one that you're looking at has 450,000, give or take a few little odd nouns that fall out near the end. It's more than just a book. It's the Bible for these kids. It's the last word for all the words. And the chief judge has the final say on every last one of them. You ever stop and think how many words he's actually heard spelled? How many kids he's seen try to, fail, weeping, tears? You're looking at the King Solomon, the Solomon himself, sitting there, the Solomon of spelling.
S-I-L.
This is Julianne Junk, and she's the only sixth grader left. Uh-oh, well, here's the last boy eliminated. That was Dustin Johnson from East Peoria, Illinois.
S-I-L-L-O-T-O-N.
Well, male chauvinist pigs, there goes the last man. He seemed to take it cheerfully, didn't he?
Not exhort to stand up and listen to the word you misspelled.
We have four contestants remaining, and they are all, as you can see...
We're down to the last four. Eileen Smith is Queens, New York.
Now, Julianne, why don't you move down to the second seat in the
back? Julianne Junkin of Florida, Alabama.
Side of the aisle.
Over to the side. And this is Tara Farone, number 13. She's from Peninsula, Ohio.
All right, Eileen, your honor again.
And the other finalist is Gail Meyer of Bartlett, Tennessee.
This is another French word, glaçon. It means a piece of sea ice, a fragment of a larger, like an iceberg, a small piece from an iceberg is called a glaçon.
One of those tough French words.
Mm-hmm. Glaçon.
This is Eileen Smith.
Glaçon. G-L-A-I-S-S-O-N.
Uh-oh. Sorry, Eileen. She got right down there. She knew she missed it, didn't she?
Yes.
The correct spelling is G-L-A-C-O-N.
Gosh, to come so far and...
Ornithoscopy.
Not make the top three.
Ornithoscopy is the practice of predicting by observing the flight of birds. Fortune tellers who...
this is Tara Farone,
by watching the flight of birds.
Peninsula,
they
Ohio.
Practice.
She's in the
ornithoscopy.
Eighth grade.
Ornithoscopy.
Give me the root of the word.
Pardon?
The root of the word.
It is Greek in its origin. Ornithoscopy. Bird watching.
Pronounce it again.
Ornithoscopy.
You can feel the tension in this room.
Ornithoscopy.
There's a lot of pressure on
ornithoscopy. Ornithoscopy.
Ornithoscopy.
O-R-N.
Pronounce it again.
Ornithoscopy. Ornithoscopy. Ornithoscopy.
Ornithoscopy. O-R-N. I G H O S C A P Y.
Oh, this is an O instead of an A.
No.
One letter.
The correct spelling is O R N I T H O S C O.
We are now down to the two finalists, Julianne Junkin.
In the national spelling bee.
Who is on the right. She's the only sixth grader left. In fact, she's one of the youngest contestants.
47th speed are two young ladies from the South, from Memphis, Gail Meyer, and from Birmingham, Julianne Junkin. At this...
This is it.
Familiar.
Do you remember when you were sitting there, Steve?
It looks much better from this side of the light.
Not bad.
At this point in the program, the procedure, the spelling procedure changes. And I think both it's advisable and informative at this point
for Dr. Baker to read the three rules that pertain to the spelling when the number of contestants is reduced to two. They would be rules 9, 10, and 11, and you'll find them on the back page of your program. Dr. Baker, would you proceed with the reading, please, of those three rules?
When the contestants are reduced to two, the elimination procedure changes. At that point, when one contestant misspells a word, the other contestant shall be given an opportunity to spell the same word. If the second contestant spells that word correctly, plus the next word on the pronouncer's list, then the second contestant shall be declared the champion. If one of the last two spellers misses, and the other, after correcting the error, misspells a new word submitted to him, her, then the misspelled new word shall be referred to the first speller. If the first speller then succeeds in correcting the error and correctly spells the next word on the pronouncer's list, then he shall be declared champion. If both spellers misspell the same word, both shall continue in the contest. And the one who first misspelled the word shall be given a new word to spell. The contest shall then continue under rules 9 and 10.
This is it.
Is the death record desk ready?
Yes.
And judges, are you ready? And are we set on the tapes? All right, Gail.
This may be pronounced either Oriflamme or Oriflamme. It's a banner inspiring devotion or courage, a bright symbol or ensign. Oriflamme or Oriflamme. Oriflamme.
That's a tough word.
It's a bright banner. Excuse me. Oriflamme.
O-R-A-F-L-A-M.
Oriflamme. It's the name of a bright banner or a symbol.
Oriflamme.
Oriflamme. Oriflamme.
O-R-O-F-L-A-M.
Well, they both missed it. This is getting very tense.
The correct spelling is O-R-I-F-L-A-M-M-E. Mantelletta, Latin and Italian word for a knee-length outer garment. Mantelletta.
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 This is Gail Meyer from Bartlett, Tennessee.
I doubt it. But you want to look? Let the judges look at it.
And on our left is Julie Ann Junkin. These are the two finalists. Julie is from Gordo, Alabama. She's in sixth grade. Gail's an eighth grader. And right now they're having a little consultation on this word.
I don't know if it comes from Mantilla.
No, not that's not.
There's a consultation between the pronouncer and the judge about the origin of the word.
Mantelletta.
Does not come from Mantilla.
M-A-N-T-I-L. L E-P-A.
One letter out of place. She flipped an E.
Mantelepa.
An A instead of an E. This may be it. Deciding vote.
M-A-N-T-E-L-L-E-P-P-A. Mantelepa.
Well, what is Julie Ann Junkin? If she spells the next word right.
Hydrophyte. Hydrophyte is a plant that grows in water. A plant.
If she spells this word correctly, she's
hydrophyte. Hydrophyte.
Hydrophyte.
Hydrophyte.
Well, that's Julie's mother. The judges are consulting about pronunciation of the word. Yeah, they're challenging that word. You can cut the tension with a knife.
There's an awful lot of luck involved in which word you get. It takes skill to stay up, but there is an awful lot of luck involved in the going down. It's really the word you picked at random.
Sure.
We're ready, Dr. Baker, for the word. Hydrophyte.
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 Right.
Hydrophyte. 1974 National Spelling Bee, Julianne Junkin, representing the Birmingham Folk Herald, and her lovely runner-up, Gail Meyer, representing the Memphis Press Demeter. Congratulations,
Gail. Okay, this is Gene Shepherd at the National Finals of the Spelling Bee in 1974, and
Stephen Hayes, last year's runner-up.
And we hope you've enjoyed it. It's been a fantastic day.
Over here.